and bread. Tomorrow night we'll change our dish and try a little fish instead.
Everybody.
Catfish for supper.
Syria's Interior Ministry has acknowledged what it called individual violations after dozens of people from the Alawite minority were reported to have been summarily executed. Footage released by rights groups shows bodies in civilian clothing piled in the yard of a house or by the side of a road in Latakia province. Hugo Bishega reports.
This is the worst violence since the fall of Bashar al-Assad, as the new government's troops confronted fighters loyal to him. It was a large operation targeting strongholds of the old regime on the Mediterranean coast and an attempt to crush an insurgency. The authorities say the fighting was triggered by a deadly and well-planned ambush on their forces yesterday. Reinforcements were sent from across the country, with heavy gunfire reported in the provinces of Latakia and Tartus. This is also the heartland of the Alawite minority, to which the Assad family belong.
President Trump has defended President Putin after Russia mounted a large air attack on Ukraine overnight. He said his Russian counterpart had done what any leader would, given its adversary had been denied US arms and intelligence. An hour earlier, he'd threatened to impose additional sanctions and tariffs on Moscow because of the bombardment. Speaking in the Oval Office, Mr. Trump again criticized Ukraine's attitude towards peace negotiations.
I'm finding it more difficult, frankly, to deal with Ukraine. And they don't have the cards. As you know, we're meeting in Saudi Arabia on sometime next week. That in terms of getting a final settlement, it may be easier dealing with Russia, which is surprising because they have all the cards. And they're bombing the hell out of them right now.
South Sudan's information minister says 27 soldiers have been killed after two UN helicopters evacuating troops were fired upon. The UN said the attack in the northeastern Upper Nile state might constitute a war crime. It follows fighting between the army and an ethnic militia, which has highlighted tension between the leaders who fought a civil war in South Sudan. Will Ross reports.
President Salva Kiir said one helicopter managed to take off after it had come under fire, but he said it then crash-landed, killing everyone on board, including a military general who was in charge of the army forces in Nasir. He appealed for calm and said the country would not return to civil war. The fact that he blamed forces loyal to the first vice president, Riek Machar, for the attack is a sign of just how dangerous the situation is. It's been 7 years since the two long-term rivals signed a power-sharing agreement to end the civil war, and this week's violence suggests the deal is more fragile than ever.
The UN says it will stop providing food and nutritional supplies to more than 2 million people in West and Central Africa next month unless it receives urgent funding. The World Food Programme says it requires $620 million to continue providing the aid. On Wednesday, monthly food rations for Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh were reduced. BBC News. A court in London has convicted three Bulgarians for being part of one of the largest and most complex Russian spy operations ever uncovered on British soil. Operating out of a seaside hotel in the east of England, they carried out elaborate surveillance on people and places. The Polish Prime Minister says the country must pursue the most advanced military capabilities, including nuclear and modern unconventional weapons. Donald Tusk said the country wasn't preparing for war, but engaged in a serious race for security. He also outlined plans to make all adult men undergo military training. More from Adam Easton in Warsaw.
President Trump's decision to suspend military supplies to Ukraine has provoked a swift response in neighbouring Poland. Donald Tusk said a military training model for adult men could be ready by the end of the year. He said he wanted to make the Polish army the biggest in Europe after Ukraine, with 500,000 soldiers. Mr. Tusk also said he supported withdrawing from conventions that banned anti-personnel mines and cluster munitions, and said he'd like to acquire nuclear weapons, even if he acknowledged such a scenario would be very difficult. Poland already spends a higher proportion of its GDP on defence than any other NATO member, including the United States.
Military officials in Colombia say 29 members of the security forces have been kidnapped following unrest in the southwest of the country. A military commander blamed a dissident faction of the former FARC rebel group for the attack. Colombia's defense minister said the dissident rebels organized the attack after the army had launched an operation against groups fighting over control of cocaine production in Cauca. Bernie Eccleston, the former boss of the motor racing brand Formula One, has sold his vintage car collection, thought to be worth $500 million. The 69 cars were bought by the son of the founder of Red Bull, which runs its own Formula One team. That's the latest BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Five Nines, a locally owned cloud service provider of enterprise-level IT infrastructure consulting, hosting, and management services. On the web at fivenines.com. Phone number 512-1000.
6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to
no change without struggle. No one in power ain't giving up nothing. No change without struggle. No one in power.
WORT 89.9 FM, listener-sponsored community radio, Madison, Wisconsin.
And hello, welcome to A Public Affair. I am Esti Dinor, and we are winding down on the pledge drive, but we are still there. And I still have to raise a lot of money today. And with me to do that is Janet Parker, a longtime activist, great member of the community. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Esti. What a pleasure to be here with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
Yeah. So tell people briefly, if you would, why they should pledge or donate and where they can do it and, you know, whatever you feel like, in a very brief way.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. I want to speak to you, listener, and just let you know that we would love your donations. What a pleasure to be here with Esti. I just enjoy her show so much. And in this next hour, we've got a great interview. In the hour following, the funny boys will be on, as Esti calls them. And for now, let me tell you about, we've got a matching donor who's going to match grants, donations. So if you pledge and you haven't pledged before, or if you are lapsed, so you haven't pledged for a year and a half, then it'll be a double donation.
We love that donor. Yeah, thank you, whoever you are.
That's very nice of them to do that. Also, want to mention that we love it if you can commit to being an evergreen donor, to donating every month. So consider that.
Just donate. That's okay too.
Donations of any
whatever
type.
You can.
New, old,
we
lapsed.
We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see. Should we tell them the web and
address? Well, can they pledge or donate? They can donate online at wortfm.org, or they can call
To 608-256-2001.
And we have a bunch of people here waiting to hear from you, and we want to thank them right away.
Keith and Roe.
And Karen.
And Karen are all
and
here.
Lainey, mm-hmm. as usual. Yeah, and we'll also thank our team in the other studio, Summer and Sarah. And we want to thank Ian's Pizza, which will bring us some food. So, folks, We are not going to do a lot of pledge wrapping right now. We do have someone to thank already, though. Jan and Patrick, who are actually from Menominee, which is way, way far north, but turns out they listen to this show every Friday, and they came into the studio. They're visiting Madison for 4 days, and they came into the station, and they love Public Affair Friday and Mel and Floyd and the Friday Morning Buzz. All right. So I just want to tell our listeners, last week, so many people called at the end of the show that every member of the staff had to join the phone answerers. Call right now. And then if you do that, if you give us enough money right away, we won't have to pledge up much during the hour, which should be a very interesting hour. Let me tell you about it. It's strange that nowadays Jews, even Israelis, who see the genocide of Palestinians and call it by name, are decried as anti-Semites, often by anti-Semites. People who demonstrate against the genocide are punished harshly. Institutions of higher learning are betraying the principles of academic freedom and the right to free speech. BBC newscasters are not allowed to utter the word. And you wonder, what is going on here? How did we get here? So to help us understand, we have with us Raz Segal. He is the director of the Master of Arts in Holocaust and Genocide Studies, as an associate professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies, and endowed professor in the study of modern genocide at Stockton University in New Jersey. Hi, Raz. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Esti. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, my pleasure. So so tell us, what's happening here? How did we get here? Briefly, we'll get into details, but give us the big picture.
Yeah, well, we now live, with levels of absurdity that are kind of blowing up in our face constantly, in many ways. How did we get to the situation where Jews, including Israeli Jews, as you say, are, described and attacked as anti-Semites just by pointing out, just by pointing out reality, right? By describing the reality that we all see, for example, by commenting, say, on the thousands of videos that Israeli soldiers and officers have themselves uploaded to social media from Gaza, right? How did we get to this? The very short answer, right, is that we've conflated a state and a people, that is Israel and Jews, in a way that Jews who do not identify with the state, or Jews who describe themselves explicitly as anti-Zionists, right? Now become basically anti-Semites, right? So this is rooted, of course, in a longer history. We might say about self-hating Jews, right? This idea of self-hating Jews, but it's really a new phenomena after 1948, once Israel is established in the 1948 war and the Nakba, where Israel claims basically to represent all Jews around the world, and therefore to really represent Jewish identity after 1948. And this argument basically explicitly and sometimes implicitly that Israel advances, that the only way to be a Jew after 1948 is to identify with the Israeli state or to support the Israeli state and Zionism, the political ideology. And if you don't, and especially if you're directly opposed to it, right, then you basically become an anti-Semite, right? So this basically weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism that the equation of anti-Zionism, of anti-Semitism, is very central in it. And if I may, I'll just say two more quick things about this. This weaponization, really, in its current form, is an Israeli state project that emerged in the 1990s, right? So it's important to say that this has a history well before the 7th of October, 2023, of course, right? Of course, it has intensified very significantly after October, 2023. And again, it's very important to just very briefly explain to listeners that in a very simple way, when we say the struggle against anti-Semitism, right? The struggle against anti-Semitism is a struggle since the late 19th century, really, to protect a group, Jews, from discriminatory and exclusionary and violent states, right? And the weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism is really creating a world turned upside down in the sense that now in this weaponization, we're not talking anymore about protecting the group Jews, but we're shifting the focus to protect the state, Israel, from criticism of its attack against the group Palestinians, right? So it doesn't really, it becomes now about a state that's of course seen as a Jewish state, which is itself an exclusionary framework, of course, right? This exclusionary nation state framework. But in any case, we're not talking about Jews. Now the center of the focus becomes a state. Right, so it's really a world turned upside down in the sense of the struggle, the original struggle against anti-Semitism, which is about a people, and the weaponized struggle, which is about the state.
And there's this exclusion of Israel as apparently not being like any other country. Israel is committing genocide and ethnic cleansing, right? In front of the world's eyes, as you mentioned, Israeli soldiers themselves are videotaping the atrocities that they're committing and then putting it on the web. And yet there is basically a prohibition of stating what it is we're seeing. How, again, you know, yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah. It's very important to explain this, that the weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism, you know, there is a threat now that it actually becomes law. We have the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act that actually passed in the House last year and is now in the Senate, right? It's based on the definition of anti-Semitism. I mean, like any law, you need to define what we're talking about. So there's a definition of anti-Semitism of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which is an organization of global Holocaust memory that's made up of 35 member states, primarily in Europe, but also the US and Israel, and a few other states outside of Europe. And in 2016, it adopted a definition that has a very vague definition, but it's really not the issue. The issue is the 11 examples that are attached to it as an integral part of the document. And seven of them are actually about Israel and Zionism, again, and not at all about Jews. So it really represents this weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism. And the thing about it is, if this becomes law on the federal level, there's also a lot of efforts to create IRA, we can say IRA legislation on the state levels, in New Jersey, for example, where I work. But if this becomes law, as you say, what one of the things that it would mean is that a crude violation of First Amendment rights, right, of U.S. constitutional law, actually, because it would mean that criticizing Israel, which is a state, again, and criticizing a political ideology, Zionism, which are supposed to be protected rights in the US, right, will become illegal, right? Even though I can, you know, if I criticize Russia's attack on Ukraine and say that it includes genocidal elements, or even if it doesn't, it doesn't really matter. If I criticize Russia's attack on Ukraine, right, no one will argue that this is anti-Russian racism, right? The only state in the world in US law in that situation that it would be legal to criticize would be Israel. Now, The problem here, to address your question, Esti, is that this actually enhances very real anti-Semitism, right? Because people will ask, and people are already asking, they'll say, well, why are we singling out only Israel here, right? Why don't we have a legal definition of anti-Black racism, right? For example, arguably very important in the US context, right? In the US legal framework, right? So the exceptional status of Jews, but then people ask, well, maybe Jews do actually have like a special access to power, right? Maybe there is kind of a Jewish cabal that's working to push Jewish interests, right, on at the expense of other interests, you know, other groups, and these kinds of things. So this is very important, but it also then, another issue here, is that it really engages in this conflation of a state of, and a people, as I said, right? Israel is the Jewish state, and it speaks to this anti-Semitic image of double loyalty, right? That Jews are not really loyal to their states. In this case, that Jews in the U.S. are not really loyal to the U.S. because their loyalty is actually to another state, right? To Israel. So that's a very dangerous issue again. And now all of this is not very surprising. Now it's especially should not be very surprising when we take into consideration that under this current Trump administration, the people pushing for such weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism also in the law are themselves actually white supremacists and Christian nationalists, and in that sense, very much anti-Semites. Specifically, I'm referring to the Project Esther document of the Heritage Foundation, which in that sense really is part of the broader Project 2025 agenda. And so the fact that these kind of people related to the Heritage Foundation, that is Christian nationalists, white supremacists, anti-Semites, right? The fact that their project is actually really enhancing very real anti-Semitism, right, in the process of the weaponization of the struggle is not really surprising. Of course, it's extremely dangerous. It's dangerous, of course, to the people that this aims to attack primarily, which are Palestinians and their supporters. But among their supporters, of course, there are many Jews, anti-Zionist Jews, and in the process, as I just said, we have really a process that really enhances very real anti-Semitic images. So it's a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, and there's so much I want to return to, but we have not received another pledge or donation since.
We do.
Maybe
we do
less because you're
online.
Too interesting. We have?
Yeah. So let me thank Anonymous, who made a very generous donation online and is going to take a thank you gift. That's the long sleeve blue T-shirt.
Excellent.
And
thank you
for donating,
so much,
Anonymous.
I don't know about you yet, but I just got this information.
Yeah.
And that's excellent. But we need so much more. Is Anonymous a new
Anonymous looks to be a returning donor, a current
thank
donor.
Thank you so very much, Anonymous, for donating regularly. I hear through the door and everything, I hear our phone answerers having a nice chat, and I'm glad for them for that, but I need you all to stop them from doing it by calling 608-256-2001, or you can pledge online. Where again? Janet?
That's at WORT-FM.
Without dash, WORT-FM.
.org. Yep.
Yeah.
608-256.
Yeah.
2001.
Yeah. So, I don't know, Janet, have you heard this kind of discussion before?
Well, Esty, on your show, this is. What Professor Siegel is telling us is the kind of great information that we need as activists. I turn to your show for great information like this. So I thank you, and I thank Professor Siegel. But his analysis, I believe, is spot on, and I just really appreciate hearing it. If you do also, please give us a call. And and become a monthly donor, become a one-time donor. We need your support.
Yeah, and I want to point out that what we've been talking about, and we are going to get into Project Esther and what that means exactly, but we've already talked about the way that this pretense that what's happening is not happening, and calling those who point it out anti-Semites, that results in fraying of the rights of Americans, whoever they are, right? It frays the right to freedom of speech, to academic freedom.
Good point. Yeah, and his point
more than that. Mm-hmm. I just read about a journalist, an independent journalist in Canada, who was arrested for attacking online a Zionist. You know, he was arrested and kept in jail for 3 days. So this is really very important for everybody.
Essential, and I'm a war abolition activist, and this pointing out the hypocrisy between what can and cannot be said, and looking at Russia and the criticism of their war crimes, it very rarely do we hear that spoken about as if it's it's a total double standard. So I really appreciate our guest pointing that out.
Yeah. 608-256-2001, wartfm.org. We really need to hear from many more of you right now. Please call or get on your computer and help us get to our lofty goal.
Yes, give us a call, please.
Yeah, give us a call. So, as I said, so many things that already we need to talk about, and we have only, by now, we have already just a little over 30 minutes. But, two things I want to talk about is, you mentioned white supremacy in the United States and how it is white supremacists who tell us that you and I, for example, are anti-Semites. But there's white supremacy in Israel, too, which is becoming worse and worse. And especially, here's the third thing. Israel is a settler colonialist country. But that's not something that really, it hasn't been discussed at all among, non-academics, I think, until just recently. And even recently, it is being discussed among those who discuss it, but it's not part of the general public's discourse. So, okay, let's start there with Israel being a settler colonialist state, which is nothing new. It's just new to the discourse, as I said, and the issue of white supremacy, which is prevalent even more so in the settlements, among, of course, the right-wing settlers who are right now, probably as we speak, attacking Palestinians.
Yeah, before we get to that, I did want to say something about your pledge for support, actually, because I think that supporting,
yes,
I think that supporting public radio is incredibly important always, but it's particularly important these days, and it's very much related to what we're talking about, because all of this is in the frame of what I said, creating a world turned upside down, which is really a world of lies, and what I call actually a genocide-generating world of lies, because genocide, in a sense, always aims to turn the world upside down, which really means that, the attack now on free speech, the attack on academic freedom, the attack on research, on documented reality is so severe and so dangerous and so damaging that any support of, spaces and places and organizations, shows like yours, Esty, struggle and insist, right, and actually do this kind of radical insistence on documented reality and research and truth, right, is so, so important. So please, if you're listening to this show, call, support. This is really about, this would be a way for people who, you don't have to agree with everything, but people who understand the dangerous moment in which we're in, this would be supporting yourselves as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So call and support, please.
And thank you so much. And I'll just add one sentence, which is, you know, as the world is becoming even weirder and weirder, and it seems like everything that comes out of the mouth of our so-called leaders, you know, political leaders, is a lie. You know, we really depend on this kind of media, on independent media, to know what's going on. And if we don't know what's going on, we don't know what to fight against, and we don't know how to fight against it. And so this is also a tool for organizing, even if not directly. Correct, Janet?
Absolutely. I've been reading a book called The $1 Trillion Silencer. It's about all of the money that goes into silencing dissent of the military-industrial complex. WART is part of the alternative, is part of the, we are not being silenced. Your show, listening to Democracy Now! Here, and even music that's supportive of, for think of global revolutions on Mondays.
Yeah.
WART is supporting an alternative perspective and giving voice and not being silenced. So please, we need you to call.
608-256-2001, wartfm.org. I hope that by the end of Raz's next answer, we will have at least five pledgers and or donors. Raz, do you remember the question anymore?
So settler colonialism in the U.S., white in Israel, white supremacy, well, actually, you know, we have to think about settler colonialism, white supremacy in Israel and the U.S. as related phenomena, of course. I'll just say that white supremacy in Israel, of course, manifests itself as Jewish supremacy, right, as a political phenomena. Now, you know, it's very important to say that the only thing that we need to do in order to understand the settler nature of the Israeli state is to listen to what Israeli Jews and also historically Zionists have themselves said about the state. And this goes back all the way, if we want, like a very paradigmatic text in the history of Zionism, Zev Jabotinsky's The Iron Wall from 1923. Zev Jabotinsky was the father of revisionist Zionism, right-wing Zionism. And in 1923, he wrote this text, The Iron Wall, which is really an internal discussion between him and what he defined at the time as left-wing Zionists. And basically, he takes the Zionism as a colonial movement, as his point of departure, as his obvious point of departure. And he says in this kind of conversation that he has in the text with left-wing Zionists, he says, do you know of any colonial movement around the world that the indigenous population accepted, right? And of course, it's a rhetorical question in the text, and the answer is no. And therefore, Jabotinsky tells left-wing Zionists, the conclusion is that either Zionism stops, right, or it proceeds regardless of the indigenous Palestinian population. And that's how he calls them in the text, by the way, Palestinians, right, indigenous Palestinians. In that sense, it's obviously also just a description of reality, right? There's a people from other places who arrive, right, in a place where people had lived for a long, long time, and they, in various ways, displace them, forcibly displace them, take over the land, the resources, marginalize them in various ways. And of course, Zionist settler colonialism had actually been going on before 1948, but we definitely, when we think about the 1948 Nakba, the ethnic cleansing and the forced displacement of more than 750,000 Palestinians in the 1948 Nakba, the massacres of about 15,000 Palestinians in the 1948 war, the destruction of hundreds of Palestinians, towns and villages, right, and the establishment of the State of Israel, right? So we are very much talking about, you know, settler colonial violence and the creation of the Israeli state. But I urge everyone also to, again, just one example. Last October, there was a conference, a big conference, a settler conference in outside of the Gaza Strip, which included, by the way, government ministers, because of course we have a government today that's controlled in large part by settler, Jewish settler leaders, Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, others. So government ministers, lawmakers gathered outside of the Gaza Strip last October in a conference kind of that was titled Plans to Settle Gaza, right?
Yeah.
So today we have a Israeli Jewish public and political sphere that is very explicit about the fact that Israel's attack on Gaza is very much in the frame of Israeli settler colonialism, that is the greater Israel idea, right? Maximum territory, minimum Palestinians. So settler colonialism, again, it's a reality that is celebrated today among the vast majority of Israeli Jews. It's not denied. It's not denied anymore, right, among Israeli Jews. And of course, it's also a reality. I mean, think about the post-1967 settler project in the occupied West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip, right, which preceded, you know, for decades and decades, which is a crude violation of international law, right, because this is black letter, very clear-cut international law. An occupying power is not allowed to settle its population in occupied territory, right? So we see this almost about 800,000 Jews today live in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, right? So it's a reality and a discourse that is clear. It's in front of our eyes. It's celebrated. And, you know, I'll just say about this, and this ties into what I said before, the key reason that we have this weaponization of anti-Semitism, right, and we have this kind of unconditional U.S. support of Israel, right, at all costs that we, of course, saw, I mean, we've never seen such unconditional support like we've seen with the Biden administration,
yeah,
right? Never, I mean, it went to really unbelievable extremes, right? Absurdity, right? Where you saw the Biden, you know, government, Biden administration spokespeople week after week really deny reality, provide all kinds of crude rationalizations of violence. And
working so hard for a ceasefire.
Working so hard for a ceasefire, but like billions and billions of dollars for ammunition and arms to Israel to kill and to displace and so on and so forth. Why do we have such unconditional support of the U.S., you know, in this case of Israel, even when everyone sees Israeli violence, genocidal violence in Gaza after October 2023, and the way that we saw with, for example, the videos that the Israeli soldiers and officers themselves uploaded to social media, why this U.S. unconditional support? One of the ways to think about it is U.S. settler colonialism, right? Because if we come to terms with what's now, as I said, acknowledged and celebrated among Israeli Jews, that is Israeli settler colonialism, then the settler colonial genie is out of the bottle. And if it's out of the bottle, we have to deal with it, you know, not only in the Israeli case, but also, God forbid, here in the U.S. And who wants to really, really address, right, the U.S. not as a quote-unquote nation of immigrants, right, not as this bastion of democracy and freedom, which is the self, you know, proclaimed image of U.S. Of the U.S. state and society and politics, but the U.S. as what it really is, right, the U.S. as a settler, and what everyone knows that it is, right, really, the U.S. as a settler colonial state founded on genocide of indigenous people, of forced displacement, of dispossession, which is still ongoing today. And this is across the political spectrum, right? Democrats, Republicans, left, right. No one wants to really confront this reality in the U.S., which helps us explain, it's not the only thing, right? There's also American interest in the Middle East, there's arms deals, there's money, there's all kinds of things that are important. But settler colonialism in the U.S. is also one of the reasons, because the case of settler colonialism in Israel has become so in our face, right? Which only means that we need to, you know, deny it, you know, in a way that creates such absurdity that, as I said at the beginning, is blowing up in our face constantly now these days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have two people we want to thank. One is Brad, who is from Madison. Thank you very much, Brad, for your support. And Brad says, love Wort, always have. Me too.
Me too.
Almost always.
Thank you, Brad.
I started as a... You know, as a fighter against Wort when it became a kind of a fiefdom of, anyway, no time to talk about that right now.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's really ancient history by now. But since then, I've loved Wort always, absolutely. And we also have Anne, also from Madison. Thank you so much. No gift. Good radio is enough. Yes. I love that.
Very true.
But that's just two of the five that we asked for, and we're not getting really close to our goal. We have less than 20 minutes, and we need $600 more, something like that.
Maybe you'd like to go to our website and look at the gifts at the different pledge levels, or consider giving there on our website, wortfm.org. Maybe you'd like to consider becoming a monthly donor.
Yeah. Or you can call 608-256-2001. Again, it sounds to me like they're having a very animated
lively
conversation. that's not what we're here for today.
They need your call.
We need your calls. We need your donations online. We need to hear from you. We're not going to harangue you more because, well, you know what you need to do, right? And you know, if this is important for you, if this show specifically, the Friday show, is important to you, we need to hear from you now. And if you're from out of Madison, we would love to hear from you too. And if you're out of Wisconsin, we'd absolutely love to hear from you. We know that there are people listening all over. We hardly ever hear from them though. So it would be really very nice to hear from people from New York or Costa Rica or China. We did get a donation from China once.
How about Kentucky?
How about Kentucky? How about any place where you're listening? 608-256-2001, wortfm.org. We really need to hear from many more of you. And I ask that you give us the money right now. As we talk about the very, very dangerous Project Esther, you may have heard about it. We're going to ask Graves to tell us the details of what it is and how it might affect you. 608, Ir, I'm giving you a chance before he starts answering to quickly give us your donation or your pledge. 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
Yep, please give us a call.
So hopefully you have done it or you are doing it right now. Raz, tell us about Project Esther.
Yeah, so as I said, Project Esther is a project of the Heritage Foundation. It's what they call a national strategy of combating anti-Semitism. And in that sense, it's part of their Project 2025, you know, agenda. It's important, of course, to say, as I said, that it's a Christian nationalist, you know, agenda. Project Esther, you know, the people related to it are white supremacists, Christian nationalists. In that sense, as I said, very real anti-Semites. The project doesn't really aim to protect Jews. It's really, it takes the weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism to new to new extremes. It aims to attack Palestinians, to shut down and silence any pro-Palestinian advocacy and activism. really, it's, you know, it's ground zero is the academic world, where the document tells us very explicitly that the aim is to you know, expel and deport students involved in pro-Palestinian advocacy and activism, to fire professors, to shut down organizations that do pro-Palestinian advocacy and activism. And it tells us that it aims to fight the anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and anti-American right, you know, elements of pro-Palestinian activism. So we'll come back to this, you know, anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and anti-American in a second. But I'll just say that the document kind of offers to us this picture about a Hamas support network, right? A Hamas support network that is actually portrayed in the document very much with images that are related to classical anti-Semitism, in the sense of a world Jewish conspiracy, right? But now, again, kind of employed to describe this kind of Hamas support network rather than a world Jewish conspiracy. But in that sense, when we think about, again, the anti-Zionist element of this Hamas support network, then we actually see that in Project Esther's depiction, Jews do actually play a very central role in this Hamas, in this alleged Hamas support network. We have to say, obviously, that no such Hamas support network actually exists, of course, right? It's a, it's an ideological fiction. And in that sense, it really, the document in describing anti-Zionism and anti-Zionist Jews as central in this Hamas support network is very dangerous in the attack that it, you know, means on anti-Zionist Jews. That is, and when we think about anti-Zionist Jews, anti-Zionism truly had existed in the Jewish world since the emergence of Zionism, right? Anti-Zionist Jews, anti-Zionist organizations, anti-Zionist political parties. That is the way that Jews actually express their identity as Jews, right? So attacking anti-Zionist Jews as Jews is actually very, very much anti-Semitic, right? So it's not this, again, we see in a very real way that Project Esther does not intend on protecting Jews. Again, part of this kind of world of lies, the world turned upside down, saying that this is meant to protect Jews while actually attacking Jews. But I want to, again, one last thing here, to turn your attention to anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and anti-American, right? So the document actually tells us explicitly, does this connection that I suggested just in my previous comment about settler colonialism in Israel and settler colonialism in the US, right? Because you might ask, how is pro-Palestinian advocacy about a different country, how does that become like an anti-American issue, right? And it becomes an anti-American issue when we understand, right, primarily when we look at the context of settler colonialism, and when we understand that coming to terms with what Israel is doing is actually endangering, right, kind of like the self, the way that Americans and the American state defines itself by actually alighting and denying and blurring settler colonialism here. So Project Esther really, you know, encapsulates the weaponization of the struggle against anti-Semitism, and how it really, again, it puts Palestinians in danger, it puts the supporters of Palestinians in danger, and in that sense also a lot of Arabs and Muslims, but it also is very, very dangerous for Jews, because it really taps into a very real anti-Semitic imagery. It really puts Jews in danger. That's the point.
And in one word, Raz, because unfortunately we have to do more pledge wrapping here, but you yourself were fired, weren't you, from a previous job for being who you are and saying what you say?
I wasn't fired. I have a tenured position at Stockton University in New Jersey, where I have support. But I was offered a tenured position at the University of Minnesota that came together with the offer to direct the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies in the University of Minnesota last June, 2024. And as a result of a campaign against me by the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Minnesota and the Dakotas, that really has become an Israeli advocacy group, not a group that really is concerned with Jews, right? But really a pro-Israel advocacy group, a campaign against me because of what I said and wrote on Israel's genocide in Gaza, specifically, by the way, in the frame of Israeli settler colonialism, right, which really bothered the JCRC of the Minnesota and the Dakotas, and a lot of pressure on the university. Very quickly, the interim president of the university there, Ettinger, withdrew that offer. So yes, this had, I have my own story in this framework, but we have to say that, you know, hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of faculty members who are not on a tenure track their jobs have been discontinued or they've been fired. But we also have the paradigmatic case of Mara Finkelstein, a tenured Jewish anthropologist who was fired, right, for her anti-Zionist stance and for her pro-Palestinian advocacy and for criticism of Israeli genocide in Gaza. My case is, there is my case, but it's far from being the most severe case. And again, we have to really understand that the attack here is aimed primarily at Palestinians and their supporters. But we also have to say in that sense, right, just to take a step back into, so everyone can understand, right, Project Esther that I just mentioned is a project by a U.S. administration that began not with one, but two Nazi salutes.
Right.
The yellow Nazi salute. Can anyone imagine that Jews, right, and any minoritized and racialized group, right, can be safe under an administration that begins with two Nazi salutes? I mean, this is absurdity and a new kind of absurdity. And we all have to very quickly face reality and understand where we are and what's going on around us. Because as I said, this is extremely dangerous for Palestinians, for their supporters, for Jews. But really, as you said, Esti, this is an issue for all Americans. Because
yes,
if we're for a constitutional crisis, right, violation of the U.S. Constitution of First Amendment rights, right? This concerns everyone in the U.S.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have another donation. Tell us, Janet.
We want to thank an online donor, Jillian, and thank you for your very generous donation. And her comment, she said, as a nod to the ancient history mentioned by Esti, this pledge is in memory of Rev Jeff.
Rev Jeff was one of the people who supported me and others when we demanded that WRT becomes democratized and, by the people, for the people. Yes. Thank you so much, Gillian. Nice to hear from you. It's so frustrating to me, you know. It's why I don't like pledge drives, because we invite some of our best guests and then we don't get to talk to them because we have to talk to our listeners and say, give us money, right? So yesterday I did the international music show, Hejira, together with Ankur. He helped me. We had 3 hours, we raised a bunch of money, and the donations came kind of slowly. When you have 3 hours, that's not a problem. We have 6 minutes left, and we are way far from our goal. So I'm very disturbed. I'm hurt. Hey.
Can I just say that, you know, I'm pledging $150.
Yes, thank you so much. On top of everything else, I really appreciate that.
Thank
you.
But you have
to do it online before the end of the hour, or they will consider it not coming to the show. So
really?
There's all these rules nowadays about, yeah, so please do it right now. And
oh my God.
You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, but it's...
And we'd like you to join Gillian and Raz and Anne. Hi, Anne. And Brad.
And all these people.
Jen,
who,
Patrick,
who
we
have
need you to call, please.
Who have given us and are giving us. We're getting closer with Raz's donation. Thank you so much. We're going to give you a minute to do it. But it's ridiculous that we need to hear it from our guests who are already giving us their time and their knowledge and their expertise, and not from our listeners who, I know, really appreciate this show because pretty much everywhere I go, people tell me that.
That's right. But
you know, we need to hear from them in a more concrete way right now.
Yes, I
would hate to have to pledge wrap until the end of the hour. We have about 4 minutes left now. There's so much more I want to talk with Raz about. Raz, are you ready or not yet?
I think I'm gonna have to do this after the hour.
No, you have to do it now. We can't let you wait. I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Do it after and just write that it's for SDE.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely going to consider you as
yeah.
But I, you know, there's one more thing I really want. I have like 3 pages here of questions. I'm not done with page one, right? So we'll have to invite you again to talk about it. But
sure.
One thing I wanted to mention is I've been here in Madison for a long time, but the first time I wrote for a local paper was, I don't remember what it was, but it was after Israel did something terrible to the Palestinians. We're talking 30-some years ago, so you understand. And I mentioned that I'm the daughter of a Holocaust survivor, and that what I'm seeing reminds me of the Holocaust. And you should have seen the storm that this caused. You know, I don't know how many Jews mainly wrote to the paper and denounced me and so on. But am I wrong? And you have, you know, 3 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'll answer very briefly, and we do have to have another discussion. Just
absolutely,
that,
we do. Yeah, yeah.
But look, my answer is this. First of all, anything that humans do to each other is comparable, right? So we can definitely compare the Holocaust to other cases, including to Israel's attack on Palestinians, including to the Nakba. Comparison means that there are differences and there are similarities, right? That's what comparison means. Not that everything is just like everything else. And humans compare all the time. That's how we do everything in our lives, actually. Comparison is a very important, you know, thing that humans do. But I would actually answer this concretely in a different way. And I would say that the Holocaust and the Nakba, and when I say the Nakba, I mean the 1948 Nakba and the ongoing Nakba since then, the ongoing and continued attack of Israel against Palestinians, are of the same family, right, of late modern mass violence, 20th century mass violence, that is, that are rooted in two kind of key late modern phenomena, that is the exclusionary nation state and settler and the colonialism and settler colonial violence that intersect in the Israeli case and that really are central in understanding how we got to Nazism and the Holocaust. Now, there's a lot more to say about this, right? But if we understand that there are similarities between the Holocaust and the Nakba, and there's differences, but there are also relations, right? There are the same family that defines kind of 20th century late modern mass violence, state violence, and also genocidal violence. And that's I think, an important way to think about them. Not that the Holocaust and the Nakba are the same, because they're not. There are similarities, but they're not the same. It's that they're of the same family. And that's a very troubling issue in itself. Right?
Yeah, that we need to talk about next time. We do have two people to thank.
Yeah, we want to thank...
You want to thank someone, you know, I think.
Two special thank yous. One to a special donor who's a special friend of mine, Walt. Walt says he has too many favorite shows to name. I like just about everything on Wart.
Oops.
I feel the same way. And then we want to thank James... Who
From Winona. Thank you, James.
Who, with a generous web donation.
Yes, and I hope we have some more because we haven't reached our goal, and that's not acceptable to me. So I hope we still have some coming, and I can disrupt the funny boys by thanking you all. You can still do it. There's 20 seconds left. Raz Segal, thank you so much for joining us, and we will be talking to you again in several months.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Esti. It was a pleasure talking with you, and good luck with the play.
And thank you for your donation too. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you, Janet, and thanks to Sarah and Summer, Keith, Ro, Karen, Lainey, and Ian's Pizza. I'm Esti Dinur. Next week, it's not the pledge drive anymore. So, hey, do it now. Bye bye. Reported, disregard the mainstream media,
distorted. We come and listen and support it. You're listening to WORT FM Madison. Wow, I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. Oh, I feel nice, the sugar runs by. I feel nice. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Yes, but I'm not alone today. We have a cast of thousands here today.
We do.
This tiny room is like a Marx Brothers movie. It's just like, it's my Aunt Minnie in here.
Come on in. We're having a party.
So who else is here today? Identify thyself.
Ruby's here.
Ruby's here.
Yay. They've been keeping me away for months and months. And
yeah. What's doing with you, lady?
I got a job. I had a job. And then I got a job that has more hours.